Philly Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise, session number 4, panel discussion on developing for mobile platforms. Our next podcast from E2E 2010 is a panel discussion I chaired around mobile development challenges. Our panelists were Adam Blum from Roe Mobile, who represents a retargetable development platform using Roe, Andrew Oswald from Chariot Solutions, who was in the Android corner, Joe Conway, who represented all things Apple, and I pulled up Kevin Griffin, who is a Chariot Solutions consultant who's experienced in developing an iPhone, some background in BlackBerry, and researches other open source retargetable phone platforms. A quick announcement, our education calendar is now online for the summer. Check out chariotsolutions.com/education for the calendar details. This is a talk about, just in general, challenges with mobile development and kind of a grounding in what it takes to do development in various platforms like iPhone and Android. Panelists we have today, actually Kevin's in the audience here, he's right there, but we have Joe Conway from Big Nerd Ranch. Joe has been doing iPhone development for a while, and you've actually written a book in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that published?
Yeah, it's coming out next week. It's already done and printed and everything. iPhone Programming, the Big Nerd Ranch Guide.
There we go. So, and we first actually got introduced to iPhone development through Joe last summer. And we have Adam Blum from Roe Mobile. He's going to be talking about being able to develop applications in Roe and targeting different phone sets based on Roe. We have Kevin Griffin in the audience. He did some research for us on some other things, and I'm pointing him out because I think he might do a few questions here and there. Yeah, we got him up there. Kevin Griffin, everybody. I did. I'm
By
sorry,
By the way,
Kevin.
That light is blinding.
That's true.
I'll be the one squinting for the most
of. Yeah, don't look over there. Look over here. You can blind us, like shoot the lasers back out.
Yeah, you might just need to wear them.
And Andrew Oswald, he works for Chariot Solutions. Kevin and Andrew both work for Chariot. And he worked on our Android application for the E2E website. So what I thought we'd do is kind of make this a little bit loose. I have a few slides, but mostly jumping off points. I hope to take questions from any of you as well. So if anyone has a burning question about app development or how you approach mobile development, we'd love to hear it. So just before we even get started with this, I'd like to just kind of start by talking about specifically iPhone and Android development and kind of how you approach it. So, Joe, just in a quick nutshell, talk to us about what the process is for developing an iPhone app, just at a very high level. What do you need to get started?
I think what you really need, of course, is the IDE, Xcode, which you can download from Apple. But, I think the best place to start out is you have to map out what you plan to accomplish. You need an application statement. You just say, this application is going to do X, and it's going to do it this much better than these different applications that do something similar. And from there, the best place to go is then to start mocking up your interface. You want to decide, all right, what is each screen going to look like? And once you have what each screen is going to look like, you need to decide, you need to start breaking that down, and you start looking at the code that you're going to be writing. You just say, all right, for each screen there's going to be a controller object. And this controller object is going to be responsible for communicating between this sort of data and these sort of views that are currently on the screen. And then you start writing code. And then you localize it. And then you wait 2 weeks for Apple to approve it.
2 weeks is better than what it used to be,
yeah.
Right?
Well, actually, the truth of the matter is now it's 3 days. Yeah. It's 3 days is the average now, and that's just recent.
Right, right. I think we deployed the iPad application in 2 days, right?
And the iPad was a special circumstance simply, right, because they were trying to get applications out there for the launch of the iPad to drive up the sales of the device itself. But yeah, it has been shortened very, and as much as people disagree with that whole process, I think it is the reason why the App Store is so successful. Even though they don't weed out all of the crap, they weed out most of the crap.
So I guess that's the first big challenge, really, or the first big question to wrestle with in mobile development that I was thinking of is really the iPhone model of kind of the walled garden, so to speak, of here is your set of constraints, here's the type of applications we're going to accept, and you know, here are the parameters, and we reserve the right to basically kick applications out, right?
Yeah.
So that's a pretty strong statement, but again, lots of applications are being written. So.
And you start to see, as time unfolds, because the iPhone is so new, you start to see why they kick some of these applications out, and it's usually because they're writing their own solution to it. They want that market instead, and they don't want you to have it, which understandably is okay.
Okay. So we'll get back to some of those issues in a little bit, but Andy, talk a little bit about developing for Android. So, I mean, before you even start, you obviously need a Mac to do development for an iPhone, right? You need to build on the Mac. But for the Android development, what do you need to get started?
I'd say it's really similar to what Joe is talking about. You need to have at least some kind of rough vision as to what you want to accomplish. Otherwise, you're just going to be, your wheels are going to be spinning. I can do this, I can do that, you know. Without some kind of direction, you're just going to be pretty much wasting time.
Mm-hmm.
From that point, you raise a good point. It's platform agnostic, the SDK. You should be able to develop it on Apple, Windows, and I wrote mine on Linux.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of nice. And you do have a couple of IDE choices available to you. The one that gets the most press from Google is going to be the Eclipse. They, I guess, facilitated in the development of the tooling on that platform. I'm aware that people have used IntelliJ to write Android apps as well. So it's kind of, if you're a Java developer or probably some kind of a server-side developer, these are tools you most likely already have. So it's not going to be too alien to you.
Mm-hmm. Now, the language,
assuming you have a Java background.
Right. So the language for iPhone is Objective-C, right? And you've taught a lot of developers Objective-C as part of your kind of conversion of people over to doing iPhone programming. Mm-hmm. So what do you see the transition to be like for like a Java developer?
The transition usually begins with a few days of complaining. And, and the reason is
Brackets.
the syntax is just so foreign. If you're coming from a Java background, a C-sharp background, any of those languages, they all look the same. And you get into Objective-C, and it looks different. It has the square brackets, and that freaks people out. But when you really start to look underneath the hood and see that those square brackets are just getting turned into C function calls anyway, it becomes less and less scary. And it actually, especially with the code sense completion that Xcode has, the very verbose method names become less and less of a problem. And I think once you really start to understand Objective-C, and of course I'm going to get flamed for this, I think it is truly a superior language.
So yeah, let's go ahead and stir up some controversy. The interesting thing is that you both started with, or at least you started with, let's go and design, like formal graphical mockups. And I absolutely agree, having written Objective-C apps before we started Roamable, that's certainly worthwhile if you're using something like Objective-C. Now, how many people in the room are web developers today? How many of you guys, when you write your websites, take the time to actually do a formal sort of graphical picture of the web versus just doing an HTML mockup? How many people do the graphics, formal graphics of your website?
Typically, it's delivered to you first.
So, and I'm not saying that's wrong. What I'm seeing is like for most web developers, that you end up, people just do HTML mockups, right? It's not fully functional, but they use HTML to do mockups. So, part of the value we see in letting people write their smartphone apps using mostly HTML, not mobile web apps, but native apps using mostly HTML, using a framework like Rhodes, but there are some other frameworks that are similar, is that you sort of bypass that step. You can be a little bit more agile and iterative with your client or business owner and say, hey, this is what I'm talking about. How's that look? And they can say, no. It should be like this. And then you can iterate just like you're used to if you're using some common web framework.
Okay. Now, so these retargetable frameworks like Row, you're programming in what? You said HTML?
Mostly HTML. So Rhodes is a model view controller framework. And mm-hmm. So in most MVC frameworks for the web, for example, you're doing most of your development as the views. Mm-hmm. Ideally, if you're doing it right, you're doing most of your development as views. And so in the Rhodes framework, you are most of your code is in the views, and then your controller is Ruby. But certainly for doing that interaction of like, hey, this screen should look like this, you can do that mostly in HTML.
Okay. Well, one thing I wanted to talk about as we go forward, and I'm kind of skipping around slides a little bit, is What kinds of applications work best on mobile devices? So we kind of have a little bit of a landscape here that we're going to dig into. But, you know, you're not going to write, you know, the SAP client for iPhone, right? The big, giant, honking thing. So what works best? What kinds of applications are the best types of applications to target for mobile?
Well, I would say short and direct applications.
Mm-hmm.
You get in, you get out. That's all you have to get done. They should launch fast. The experience should be quick, should be painless. There shouldn't be a whole lot of control twiddling or anything like that. There should be a subset of something that you could get on the desktop that you're going to do mobily. They should not be an all-encompassing thing.
Mm-hmm. So short. Now, what about communications with servers and things like that? Like, what kind of particular challenges do you have there?
So maybe just to add to what you're talking about in the previous question, what kinds of applications? I actually do think that you're going to any mission critical data, you're going to want to get access to. There's going to be some part of SAP that you want to use in a mobile scenario. And you're probably going to decompose it from the sort of overwhelming, you know, do everything approach that you see there. So you can expose SAP well, but I would agree, yes, you want to make it very task oriented. You know, what does somebody in my role want to do mobily? And then as to interaction with the back end system, and my apologies if some of you were at my talk earlier today, one of the things that I believe is really important is if you just need read access, there's like a lot of different ways of doing it. And Joe talked about web services access, and so you can do that directly from the device.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you're only doing read only, there's even cases where a mobile web app can maybe squeak by. But if you want to let people transact with your back-end system, then you need to provide synchronized local data. You need to have some way that people can pull the data down, have it on their device, and then transparently synchronize it to the back-end.
Okay. So what are some of the other trade-offs? Like we mentioned the fact we could do remoting. We mentioned the fact that, you know, you make the application smaller. Like what are some of the trade-offs that you make in developing for mobile device? Like maybe in terms of processing power or, you know, anything else?
I think screen real estate is actually the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
You can't shove everything you want onto one screen, and then you run into the problem where if you have all these different options that you want the user to be able to have, and you're separating it among multiple screens, well, then you have an even bigger problem, because then you're trying to classify all the different options that the user could have. And some things don't fall into classifications so neatly, and you end up having a pretty clunky interface. So I think the biggest challenge is really just getting things on the screen
in a meaningful way. I would agree that's certainly number one, and not writing things that look like scrunched up web apps. I also think doing whatever you can to allow the user to avoid typing. So things like intelligent defaults, using information that you have, like about where they're located, so they could say things like, you know, search nearby, information from PIM contacts, so maybe if they want to send something to somebody or assign something to somebody, there's a good chance their PIM contacts list has it, so they can pick from lists instead of typing. On a mobile device, there's lots of clever ways to get people to avoid typing, and especially on a device with a soft keyboard, that's a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah.
The storage is much, if you mean storage, it's far more than 256 megabytes.
Were you talking about the SD card?
Yeah, I mean like...
Because you can't put applications on it.
Yeah, you're talking about, okay. Okay, go ahead. So our framework lets you use Ruby, and the apps are about 2.5 megs. So that's room for. I definitely wasn't aware of that size limit because we've just never seen it. But that would be room for 100 apps on this device. You have room for 16,000 Rhodes-based apps would fit here, and of course you can only actually click icons for 160. So it's. You have room for 100 times more than you can actually click icons for.
Although with iPhone 4.0, which they just talked about today, they had a press conference, you'll be able to have as many applications as you want. Yeah. So they're making moves in that direction too, which is nice.
So yes, please use Ruby to write your iPhone app.
Now I would say if you are in fact targeting the Android platform, and you mentioned some of these alternative non-Java JVM languages, one thing you need to be aware of is that it's actually under the covers using the Dalvik virtual machine. So that takes the Java bytecode and converts it into Dalvik. So although you can, I'm not aware of people writing Android apps in Clojure. I think there was at some point in time, it was kind of popular among the blogosphere to see people saying, I'm going to write my Android app in Scala. That's going to involve probably a lot more overhead on the device than you're going to really want. Although, it could be fun and a nice experience for you to see how that's going to work out, but I think if you're really going to want to provide the best user experience, you're going to more likely just use Java. And of course, utilizing those other languages, you're going to be making the footprint of your application that much heavier because you need to include those libraries as part of the package.
So, in just in case you're curious, we have done perf tests of our Ruby implementation on Android, which, unlike the JRuby implementation, that's running on top of Java. We're native, so it's all written in C, and we compile your app down to Ruby bytecode. So that doesn't let you do certain things like eval, but that's okay. That's by design, and we've tested several benchmarks, and we're faster than the Dalvik VM. So, yeah, I just didn't want you to, you may be a Rhodes developer, and I want you to consider doing that. The disadvantage will not be that it's slower. Although I believe you, for some of these other languages, that they may be slower.
So Kevin, we talked about Rhodes just a little bit. There are a couple of other frameworks out there, too, right, that do this?
Yeah, there's Rhodes, obviously, which is going to give you Ruby, HTML, and JavaScript that you can write your apps in. There's another framework out there, PhoneGap, that they basically let you write apps in HTML and JavaScript, which they then bundle with their framework onto a native application, so you can submit it to a web an app store. There's Titanium from AppCelerator. They do very much the same thing. They're very UI focused. So with a lot of frameworks, you struggle creating the native look and feel. Through JavaScript and HTML, you end up using jQuery or IUI, something like that. And what Titanium did from AppCelerator is they gave you a whole UI library to make native-looking components out of JavaScript, and it worked very well. Obviously, the problem with that is then all your app logic, your business logic, is going to be sitting somewhere in those JavaScript files, in your HTML files, and suddenly you've gone back to 20 years ago before we had MVC, and everything's stuck in ndexip. So they come with pros and cons. I mean, they can look great. They're dead easy to get going with. And then, as your app gets bigger, certainly you're going to run into problems with how to structure and manage a project under one of those. But they're great to get started.
And I think he just listed the pros and cons very well. These frameworks that can do multi-phone deployment are great for getting your product out there. And they're great for seeing what kind of interest there is in these sort of things. But I think when you find out that users are genuinely interested in what you're doing, and you need to take that to the next level. At that point, these frameworks are going to have a tough time keeping up with these APIs. Especially if you look at the stuff that Apple just unleashed today. It's going to take maybe a month or two for these frameworks to catch up. And even then, Apple's going to be continuing to build on that and build on that.
So I think Kevin was making a different point, and this is where I'll say, I'm really not here on this panel. I'm not really stumping the, Rhodes is the only way to write it thing.
Right.
Echoing what I was saying earlier, I do think that the way to write a business app that you want to get, everybody in your enterprise using is some framework. If you weren't going to use us, absolutely use PhoneGap or AppCelerator. I mean, I can talk to you. I won't go on at length about what's different about our stuff, but suffice it to say that we actually think the strength is as your app gets more complex, right?
Yes, because
that's where MVC comes into play. So we're sort of you want to build an enterprise class, industrial strength app, and you're doing a lot of data handling. That's where the MVC comes into play. That's where the sync comes into play. So I actually think that, and I'm not saying it's, you know, never valuable to write something potentially in Objective-C, but if you're trying to get something, you know, this is emerging technologies for the enterprise, right? So if you're trying to get stuff deployed in your enterprise, what I haven't seen any enterprises that have homogeneous devices, that typically there's always diversity. And so beyond the sort of rapid development that, you know, all the frameworks give you, all the frameworks give you some ability to write UIs in HTML, you also have that ability to attack more than one device, which I think, you know, just today in 2010, that's what you're going to see in the enterprise. No enterprise has been able to say, you know, it's all Windows Mobile or it's all iPhone. And if they were going to try to enforce it, they probably wouldn't say all iPhone anyway.
Well, and that actually kind of jumps to the point that I had in the first theoretical slide that I had here, which is consumer versus maybe corporate driven or internal or mobile apps for the enterprise. And that, you know, you look at, for example, you look at what the people have done with the Facebook app, right? And you look at the Android app versus the iPhone app, you know, and from what I understand, the Android app has a lot of ways to go because they basically focused on heavily developers on the iPhone app and put a lot of really good stuff in there, but the Android app evolved at a different pace. So you've kind of got two development lines going, right? Two different groups of people doing development on two different platforms.
Which app are you referring to?
To the Facebook application.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, for something like that, you know, it's consumer driven. The consumer wants to have a really nice, sexy application that does, you know, Facebook, and it's easy to use and it's very native to the platform. But Joe, talk to me a little bit about like Apple and the enterprise. So I know at least for the first couple of years, they touted that they had an enterprise level, you know, support for deploying applications and kind of apps for corporations. Where are they with that today? Because I don't know really.
Not much further. Uh-huh. I do know that they're touting around this Exchange support for iPhone OS 4.0.
Mm-hmm.
More details on that I'm not familiar with because I just read the article about an hour ago.
Right.
It's tough because Apple really is a consumer-driven company. They're not. Their focus is not on the business, and for good reason, right? They got in pretty late in the game, and they're already kind of trumped when it comes to that. But I do think that if they plan on being successful in the long run, they do need to start to hit that market a little bit more, and I think they will end up hitting that market a little bit more. The thing is, though, and your slides today, you showed that application that was hitting some CRM.
Mm-hmm. The good one or the bad
one? The bad one. They showed the bad one.
Pro.
And yeah. I was just in the background laughing, thinking, like, is this what people, you know, whoever wrote that application, is this what people think they want? You know, who would ever use this application? And I think enterprise software in general has a ways to go because it's written by developers for developers,
yeah.
And it's not intuitive. It's not made for a user. It's made for someone that could do this stuff from the command line, and you're trying to give them a little bit of mobile convenience. So I think, I mean, I personally don't know in what direction it's going to go, but I do think that there's so much room for improvement in applications that are targeted at businesses. And I mean, Android and iPhone, both of these guys are in the same boat as far as who's going to get there first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just to throw out some hearsay from the OS 4.0, the iPhone announcement, they did have a slide in there which had wireless distribution of apps, which would be awesome for the enterprise.
That would be awesome.
Because you wouldn't have to, you know, mm-hmm. take it to the IT department. I don't mm-hmm. know what they mean by that, but it'd be interesting to find out.
What I think is an interesting opportunity for you guys as developers is, you know, people were banging away at trying to get mobile apps that consumers would use for years. I mean, think of all the companies that were funded around like the late 90s to do this. And it really never happened until it's sort of the combination of, you know, this compelling device, the App Store, and then just a lot of app developers. It wasn't really all based on the Apple guidelines. It was just like a lot of early consumer app developers just building great apps and really coming up with the paradigms that worked, right? It was the Wild West. I mean, we talk like it's history, but it's only like, you know, the last couple years.
Yeah.
And people built these compelling apps, and they just, it worked, right? The whole intersection of that. That still hasn't really happened with enterprise apps yet. And we could speculate on various reasons. I think the difficulty of doing sync data from here, until, you know, frameworks like ours become more popular, or there's, you know, other sync products may have something to do with it. I think the difficulty of writing across multiple platforms may have something to do. For whatever reason, it's still, if you go out to the App Store, there's just not that many apps that are targeting otherwise popular enterprise backends, which I think for developers here, I mean, that's a huge opportunity for you guys to, you know, make a mark either in your own enterprises or just make third-party software available.
Now, while we're kind of talking about, we talked a little bit about the iPhone and the enterprise, let's take it on the other end and talk about Android in the consumer market. So you write an application, you target, you want to sell it. Where do you put that application? And is that a challenge right now for the Android market?
No, it's not really too much of a challenge. Mm-hmm. It's I think so long as you have a credit card or you can prove that you have a heartbeat and you have $25 and a web connection. So Steve just, this is kind of funny, Steve said, so it took 2 days to get the updated iPad application accepted in the store. It took me 2 minutes to get the Android application up and on the Android market.
Is this the ETE one?
Correct.
So that's on the Android market?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Sorry, just a point that I was reading the other day, that the Android market, it's not quite at the same place as the iPhone, iTunes or whatever it is, but in March they had over 9,000 new applications pushed in. So, I mean, they're definitely catching up, and, you know, there are Android developers out there working to get up to speed, so I think it'll be an interesting year.
Does Android suffer from the fact that they give more control to the phone companies? Like, for example, the version of the OS or where you can go for applications. Do you think that is a challenge in any way?
I mean, they've received a lot of criticism for that, working with the providers. And I think they do have a current focus on bringing it all back together and being able to say, yeah, we want to be able to spearhead and have a single initiative. Mm-hmm. For, you know, it's, instead of having, for example, last Friday I realized that I really dropped the ball in writing the application for Android 1.6 and above, where we actually, it turns out we have a lot of 1.5 developers, so I had to go and backport that. And, you know, I wouldn't have had that problem if, you know, it was just a single thing and I could say, yeah, here's the app and go and run with it.
I think Google acknowledged that.
So you had to put out two APK files?
No, it's a single one. I just backported it.
I think Google acknowledged that recently. I mean, they have addressed that fragmentation is what's killing Android right now, and that's purely down to carriers waiting to, you know, push out a new version. So.
Right.
But, I mean, they're fully aware of it. I wouldn't think it'd be that long before we come and see them saying, this is the platform, or this is the platform for Android that, you know, we're going to be expecting phone companies to deliver to users. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions from the audience? Yes.
One point that came up earlier was the argument about frameworks not being able to keep up with like new releases of mm-hmm. the different native software platforms and how that might impact schedules and stuff. From an enterprise perspective, do you think that's as big a concern for enterprises versus consumer apps? It's kind of the trade-off.
So I would turn that on its side, right? So I would say, here's who's going to have the problems keeping up with the current releases. Like, either as an enterprise developer or as an app developer, before I started Rumbleball, I was an app developer effectively at Good, you know, putting out email clients and web browsers, trying to keep up with the OSs. It was impossible to focus on building a great app and keep up with the OSs. We couldn't do it. There was just no way. We couldn't. It was a nightmare. Whereas our, like, as a framework provider, and I'm sure the other framework providers will say the same thing, our whole job in life, we don't build apps for people, we don't do any of that stuff. Our whole job in life is to just stay current. So when the iPhone 3.0 SDK came out, we had push in Rhodes the day it came out.
I think so. It's a good point of who's keeping up with which OS APIs. I've been working with the Titanium recently, but Tuesday they launched the iPad function, the iPad UI functionality for split views and popovers. So that wasn't incredibly long after, you know, the old, before the iPad was out, or sorry, after the iPad was out. So So, I mean, the companies are working, you know, steadily along with those things. I mean, I'm sure there's people at, down at Adam's company right now just downloading the OS4.
You used it.
Yeah. No, I mean, the OS4 SDK came out. Yeah. You know, the beta is out there right now. I'm sure someone's out there downloading. For whether it's an issue for enterprise, I'm not entirely sure, because they tend to lag. They tend to be on a certain different curve behind the high technology. For consumer apps, yeah, I'm sure, you know, it's an issue. But like Adam said, that's their sole purpose, is to keep current with those and to keep, you know, their users happy with their current APIs. So.
The other thing I'll say is that open source helps as a fallback, because if you have a community of developers that care, they do it. Like, if you don't do it fast enough, they do it for you.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, Rich.
So, is there anything on the Android side for enterprise distribution? So, I develop an internal app and want to be able to distribute it to all the employees.
Like a push kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it could be something as simple as if you have a mailing list and you, what happens with Android file or applications when you build them, it kind of gets compressed into a zip file known as an APK, and that's the how it gets distributed. It could be as simple a distribution model as sending that in an email, and then you could just install that onto the device. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's really...
Oh, what about the other version? You know, the BlackBerry is famous for sort of centralizing control. So instead of saying, here's an app you can install or you can update, actually pushing that update or blocking things down, is there anything that approaches that?
I think Adam and maybe Kevin and Joe would probably be better to...
Not familiar with the BlackBerry.
Doing it in a general way it's a very interesting problem. And then some of the platforms you can even do, like Windows Mobile, you can do incremental updates. And so we have a partnership that we're actually going to be... It's on the staging version of Rohub, our hosted service now, with Sybase, with their Afaria server. And on some platforms, they're sort of stuck with just the complete update, like iPhone, that's it. You do the complete update or you don't. But on other platforms, they support incremental updates. So, like, you can have a Windows Mobile thing and maybe only a couple DLLs change, and they'll push it out. So we did the partnership with Sybase because they have a lot of traction in the enterprise, and it seemed like a pretty good product. But I haven't used... There's several other products. Actually, my old company, Good, has a product for provisioning, and so does... and device management. And so does... There's a company called Mobile Iron. But I don't claim to be an expert in the strengths of all of them.
Just in case the people in the back didn't really hear the question, it was what needs to be addressed for enterprise distribution. Would you say that's accurate? Okay.
Yeah.
One thing I will say is that if you want to do sync data, you know, I'm saying, like, you really want to do sync data, it does raise, just to sort of full disclosure, is immediately when an enterprise starts considering, they say sync data, uh-oh. Well, what if people drop the stuff in a taxi cab? So you have to have, if you're going to do sync data, you have to have an answer to that question. And so this is why we did a partnership with Sybase, because they do the app provisioning and device management. But I would certainly feel better if that was, like, it feels weird as an open source company that's trying to come here and build this, like, groundswell of demand where everybody can just use it and try it, to do, like, a traditional enterprise software company. If anybody's considering starting an open source company, we won't do this, by the way. I think the general space of device management and app provisioning is very interesting and is going to explode over the next few years.
What's the Apple-less method of distributing apps privately in a corporate setting away off of the iTunes site?
You have two files, the application itself and a provisioning file, and you strap them onto iTunes. So there's a different, well,
there's
an enterprise level one, which is $300.
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
it's like 500 employees.
Yeah, it's a little bit more expensive than it is for the personal edition. And the only difference really is that you have more devices that you can put your software onto with the enterprise edition. Yeah. With the personal edition, you have 100 devices per year that you can put. So if you have a company smaller than 100 people and you're just doing in-house development, it doesn't make any sense to get anything any better than that.
OS4 added the wireless enterprise apps.
It did add the wireless distribution of apps for the enterprise. So that makes enterprise distribution just beautiful.
Great.
I have another question. Do you really need a mobile app? In some cases, and this is like the cheating way out, right? In some cases, using HTML and CSS, couldn't you achieve 60% of what you needed? I'm not saying that you end that way, but could you start that way?
Absolutely, you could. We've had people come to us and say, with a huge document, and say, here's our entire application we have right now, build as a mobile version. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier, is you're kind of missing the point. You want to have short, focused apps, and you can do that with, you know, with a web app and some styling. It gets down to what you actually need functionally off the device. So if you want geolocation or context, you know, access, then as soon as you start needing those things, then you start looking at, yeah, am I going to build a native app, or do I need a framework, because I've got to hit four different platforms in the company. But starting on a web app is, it's an easy thing to get started with.
Yeah,
I think that's fine, and you can even leverage a lot of that content to use any framework. Then you can use that HTML and CSS. If you want your users to transact with the back end, they will not do it over the mobile web.
Right.
It's just, I'm not even sure if I can explain all the reasons why. It's just been proven over and over again. They will not work with your enterprise system. They'll tweet maybe over the mobile web.
Right.
They're not going to work with your enterprise system over a mobile web.
Well, browser. I'm thinking more of like, Amazon.com. I think along with their apps, they had the nice, easy to use web app. Good enough for what they needed for that particular case. So that's an alternative to look at. That's what I was thinking. Any other questions? Okay. I flip through here briefly.
Can we have
one more?
Along the same lines of the web app versus mobile app, integrated app line of things. So just opinion, and I've talked to Adam already some about this, but it'd be interesting to know your like what would you say is the most important things to consider when you're trying to make that decision if you're going to develop an app as a mobile website or as an integrated app on the phone?
I think the number one is, do you want it to be bidirectional? Do you want people to update the data? I mean, there's some obvious ones, right, like device capabilities and making it look more like a native app. But I think the biggest one is it write as well as read?
I would say take your expertise into the context as well. So if you're really familiar with writing, let's say Ruby, Rails application, something like Row would be pretty handy, and you get something out really quick. Now, if it happens to have something, a feature, if that app becomes wildly popular, and it has a feature that something that would be more suitable for completely native application, then that'd be a great problem to have. So you could say, okay, you bring that to raise finances to say, okay, we can hire some outside people to help here, or perhaps that'd be just a motivation enough for yourself to get more acclimated into, if we're talking whatever that particular platform is, Objective-C or some kind of Java. So I think whatever in the particular context of what you have the expertise in to potentially create get the app out there and to start gaining that market for your app.
I think the device capabilities is a big deal, except for we're talking at an enterprise conference about these things where device capabilities don't really play into it, which is kind of where I was heading with the, enterprise applications aren't that great because they're really just, here's some text, now press a button, please. Oh, did you need to enter your username and password? Thanks for that, too. There's nothing special about them. All the work is being done by a server somewhere else. If you're writing a consumer application, I would never even consider using a web app or consider even using one of those frameworks. I'm sorry. Having to take advantage of things like OpenGL, core animation, things that really make your application pop are only things you really can get natively, at least in a nice way. But for enterprise applications, if you can get it done on the web.
There's so many framework apps from us and others that do animation.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
It's
animate.
The rule rather than the exception, actually.
But I guess, too, though, I think, you know, there's another breed of enterprise apps where, yeah, it's a. I'll give an example from my company. We are looking to take it will be used by consumers, but it is a we reserve. Moving trucks online, the end consumer would do that. Right now, we have a lot of web traffic that is using our standard website, not even a WAP site, but 5% of our traffic is still coming from mobile devices. And with that kind of site, obviously we've got a lot of business logic in the background that serves up data to that site. We could make a WAP site for that, there are some things that it would be nice because of what it is to take advantage of things like the contacts or the GPS. You can locate the locations and all that stuff and do it for them, but there are trade-offs in doing that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but what you want to do the website is you want the ease of use and productivity that you have by using familiar web skills, I would guess, right? HTML, CSS, everybody knows it. You can get developers easily. Going past just Rhodes, like what all the frameworks are saying is use those skills and have your cake and eat it too. Use those skills, get the productivity, and have your device capabilities and your local data. So then it's sort of, it seems like a reasonable straw man to then shoot at. And then, yes, it's possible that you might want to use some capability that the particular framework hasn't exposed, but I think that's a reasonable straw man to start with. I actually, the part that I'm most vehement about, and luckily there's nobody on this panel that's really advocating that, is that the mobile web on the modern smartphone is very niche now. The need to do it is... should be very small. You can either, in other words, it's so easy enough, I'm advocating frameworks, but you know what? The Objective-C is a nice development environment, and so is Android. I like native development too. I would pick frameworks or native over doing a mobile web app almost every time.
Do you think that would change when we get further into HTML5, then we have things that you can, you know, grab GPS from the HTML5 from a HTML5 compliant WebKit browser with SQLite on device storage?
Yeah, you think the reason why I don't think it will change is guess when that went SQL went to the W3C as a proposed enhancement.
When?
It was 9 years ago.
Wow.
Okay, so you're going to want other things like access to PIM contacts, like the access to push. These devices are innovating so fast, and having sat on a standards committee that, like, the last rev of which took 3 years, I just can't see the W3C iterating anything close to as fast as HTC drops a new device.
Yeah. Mm.
So if you're getting started, so we've got all these different landscapes, let's say we're doing iPhone. So what would you point people to as they're learning iPhone and they're maybe there's some open source libraries they could take advantage of? Like, what's that landscape look like? We'll look at Android and iPhone, and we'll look at Rhodes as well.
Yeah, you could read my book.
This is prime.
You know, as a softball, so catch it. And then
you could
it
also come to my 5-day boot camp as well. Now, I think on the iPhone, there's so many things that you need to do. All the common things are so easy to do on the iPhone that you don't end up having to reach out and grab a third-party library to do those sorts of things. They're really things that are on the fringe, things that are not... you're not using all the time. Those are where you need to reach out. And I would say for the iPhone, just because there are so many developers, that there are a lot of great resources for those things. I know that Facebook's 320 API, a lot of people have been using that. You can find, you know, TouchXML, TouchJSON, and people are out there and they're doing those things. So,
is there a good website that, like, for developers, a home for them?
Google. And Google Code as well, too. A lot of things are hosted there. I know that there's a great physics library that's for the iPhone that's hosted there called Chipmunk. What was I going to say? There was somewhere I was going with that one. Might have to come back to me.
As a native iPhone developer, I'm curious, or as an underlying Objective-C developer, what are your thoughts about one of the things I've seen people do with some success, but I'm curious what you think is, say if you don't want to use a full-on framework, but you just like the idea of writing your interface in HTML, so you can do that with UI WebView, but then there's things like iWebKit, WebApp.net, JQ Touch, and IUI.
Not familiar with any of those. To be honest, Objective-C is my first language, not my first language I ever learned, but it's the language that I can speak better than English. So the idea of using HTML or something like that, it's just, I can do those things faster in Objective-C, so I'm a big proponent of saying, you know, go ahead and do it in the native language and Objective-C. But I certainly understand that some people don't have the time or the resources to actually learn Objective-C.
I was just going to say, it sounds like only when you really grok very well Objective-C, things start to click, and then you see all the options you have in the native iPhone.
Yeah, and just the way they kind of end up doing things on Apple's end with Objective-C, you kind of have to drop what you know about programming, a lot of what you know about programming, and kind of adopt their philosophies, and I think that's one of the biggest speed bumps, is you can't force your philosophies from other development environments onto the iPhone, because it's just not going to work out. But as soon as you step back and say, there's a way of doing this, then things become very, very easy. Getting an iPhone application, even a fairly complicated iPhone application out the door, you know, it's a month of development time, and we're talking big applications here that do lots of great things. So if you're looking at doing multiple platforms, you won't have the resources to dedicate just to the iPhone platform, and I certainly understand
that. And that's the biggest challenge
I think that's the biggest challenge.
Yeah.
But having, I mean, honestly, you can have the projects that I work on, when I do my consulting, I'm not working with anyone else. You can get, Apple's frameworks are so nice that one person can write an entire application in a short period of time.
How about for the Android side? Like, what do we have available? Developer.android.com is the main portal.
Right. I mean, it's a lot like what Joe said, Google Code. I would think you'd probably be surprised at how much Android code is freely available. And not only how much, but how well-written the code is. We're probably talking Google engineers, top-notch engineers, submitting this code out for free consumption. And, of course, a lot of the framework code itself is open source. So, I mean, that's a great way to go about getting more acclimated to how things work.
And I'll also say, in regards to the question that we're talking about right now, and IDEs, Xcode, which is the thing that you write iPhone applications in, has built in, the documentation's built in to the editor, which makes it incredibly simple to go out and you say, I need to do task X, let me check it up in the documentation. It's going to list all the methods, describe them. They have, hands down, one of the best documentation systems I've ever seen. As much as I like to say, go out and buy my book. Once again, go out and buy my book. I'm just kidding. You could learn absolutely everything from that documentation. It's a little terse. It's a little dry, but it's very well written, and it covers all the bases that you might need. Oh, so the course is not about web services or about enterprise or anything like that. It's about actually learning Objective-C and the entire Cocoa Touch API. So in the few chapters that we do discuss web services and that sort of communication, we just hit Apple for their RSS feed. So we're not really focused on the enterprise or that stuff. We're really iPhone applications.
But while we're talking about that, so if you had to consume a web service, and or you know consume the results of it and call it, like what are the major libraries that are out there for that? I mean, do they have built-in parsing for things like JSON and such?
They don't have built-in parsing for JSON, but they do. You can go and grab TouchJSON from Google Code, actually.
Okay.
And that's been proven to be one of the better ones about that. They don't have built-in SOAP request generators, which is a huge pain for anyone that's doing SOAP. And as far as I've seen, I haven't seen a third-party library that's actually done that successfully yet.
Okay.
I did see some code generating thing from a WSDL, and in one of my last classes, one of the students brought it up, and he ran it, and it generated 1,200 source files. So
what?
I, yeah. So good luck.
We put in one big giant file and do what we did in the morning keynote.
It was and it wouldn't compile, by the way, either. So it looked like an atrocious mess. I'm sure that's a solution that someone will come up with in the near future, especially. Well, I don't know. I went to the talk over there, and now I've already forgot his name. But he was talking about how 71% of web services are RESTful web services, and that SOAP is slowly starting to die out. And maybe that's the case. And maybe Apple knows something that we don't know. Maybe they know that it's going to die out, and there's no point in putting in the extra effort to support it. And maybe they're wrong. So.
Okay. How about for getting started with Roe? If you want to.
So we've got a terse, dry tutorial up there, which I wrote. And there's a much better tutorial, chatty tutorial, written by Sarah Allen that's up on the RoamMobile.com doc site. And then Sarah and, who's a frequent speaker at Ruby conferences, and her co-author, Vidal Gropera, have written a book that's out in beta on A-Press now about RoamMobile development.
And you got the other tools?
Oh, the other frameworks, yeah. I mean, let Google do the work for you, and they all have wiki sites, they all have community Google groups, that type of stuff, and most of which right now are all they're all busy with people doing new things. They're all good places to go and find out code if that's what you want to start doing. But for the other frameworks, say not Rose, say PhoneGap or Titanium. I mean, you're doing JavaScript, so any developer is going to be able to pick it up and get started pretty quickly. I mean, yeah, for Titanium you pay for support, so.
Right.
So if you want learning like bug fixes, etc., you can go through the nose.
Any other questions? Yes. Well, you and then you.
Development platform. I know that you talked about iPhone having you needed a Mac to do that, but is there any other phones or any other phones or platforms that talking mobile framework?
Yeah.
Like they won't run on
BlackBerry, you have to have a Windows machine, and same with Symbian.
You don't have to have one for BlackBerry. You can hack the. Well, you can have the BlackBerry.
You can run parallels. You can run parallels, but
you can do it natively as well. But I mean, it's a bit of a hacky effort to get the SDK into.
No, I'm talking the emulator.
Oh, the emulator
is a Windows emulator.
Yeah.
You can run it in parallels, but if you want to run the BlackBerry emulator, it's Windows.
Yeah, and if you want to build for the Windows platform, obviously you're getting Visual Studio, and you're going to be on a Windows machine to do that. So.
And paying a lot of cash, probably,
now,
too.
Well, yeah, apart from, that's a good point, actually. With Windows Phone 7, if anyone was looking at that, they actually gave all our tools out for free this time. So they finally got something.
Stole that one from Apple.
Yeah.
Actually, BlackBerry's now like where you can have a shared certificate. So we do hosted builds for BlackBerry now, legally.
Oh.
And hosted builds for everything on Roe Hub except for iPhone, where it's not legal. We make you have to do it locally.
And even with the iPhone, you have to do it in Xcode. You couldn't even do it on a Mac from the command line. Even if you had the certificates and you were somehow that fanciful of a Unix programmer, it's just they have it blocked off as far as signing it and deploying.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, yeah, for your final deploy. Yes, for your final deploy, you have to do it from Mexico, but for your ongoing builds to the emulator, we automate that.
Yeah,
similar. That's a good point, though, actually. With any of the frameworks, the PhoneGap or Titanium, any of those extra ones, the HTML or JavaScript ones, you still have to have the SDKs on your machine to do it. You still have to have the iPhone SDK. You still have to have the BlackBerry SDK if you want to do those. Or if you're going to look at Palm or something, you need all those as well. So you're going to probably at some point, if you're trying to hit every mobile platform, you're probably going to have at least two development environments, one for your Mac and one for Windows.
So all that said, you're absolutely correct. Kevin was saying, you for iPhone, you must have a Mac. we will, if it's convenient for you, just so you know, on RowHub, you can do hosted builds for all the other platforms. But yeah, and it's not really a technical thing on the Mac, it's just a legal, we try to stay on Apple's good side, and they've made it very clear that the build has to be done, not just on a Mac, but on a Mac with the personal copy of the SDK.
You have a question back there, and then we have this one. Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to agree with Blackbird a little bit more. Why is no migrant application store activity for Blackbirds, and especially for the enterprise? Because enterprise like Blackbird much better than anything else. Why is it stalling?
I think they're actually trying to revive it. They've released a BlackBerry OS 5, and they have a new BlackBerry App World, I think it's called out there. So they're making efforts to rejuvenate BlackBerry on the enterprise, and certainly from a consumer app perspective. Why it's stalled over the past few years, I guess they maybe got complacent. I really couldn't tell you. And then there's been spurred. Are we running out of time?
No, you're fine.
Oh, I guess spurred. I guess they were spurred by competition from iPhone and Android both coming up rapidly, and BlackBerry kind of lost traction. They hadn't really done anything for a while. So.
I mean, it's I myself hate using BlackBerry devices, but it's still huge installed base.
Giant, yeah. Hmm.
So if you're writing apps for the enterprise, you can't ignore BlackBerry. I mean, if you want to get as many seats as you can in the enterprise, you're going to have to grit your teeth and do a BlackBerry version somehow. Hopefully it's something a framework can help with.
Some frameworks have a telephony API in them for certain handsets, and I don't know off the top of my head which ones match up with which. I'm not sure how you would go about driving the voice from a framework perspective. Maybe Adam's got something in his.
I mean, I'll defer to the Android expert, but isn't that the whole nominal purpose of this registering intents? The idea is that you can replace anything. Like, you can replace the phone dialer, you can place the address book, you register your intent for that event. And then when an app says, okay, I want to dial the phone, then you've registered. I mean, I've never written an app that did this, but isn't that the idea, that you can replace basic capabilities?
Yeah, without getting too in the trenches of Android, actually, it's kind of a shame that you return the device, because part of the app that we have for the conference and on the map, we have, there's an overlay from the Chariot logo, and there's a phone icon there, and that could actually go ahead, and the number's for the hotel. And so what happens there is, at least on these applications, you have to specify that the phone might be making calls. So there's a list of things that you say, okay, this may be doing malicious things, but I trust the producers of the application. So. Yeah, it's based by intent, yeah, so you can actually have invoke that to automatically call numbers.
Yes, and I know there are many apps that do that, which makes me really surprised. It seems to me it would be really trivial, assuming you can access the voice recognition part of it. And I don't know if that's a Google private thing or what, but to just write an alternate path that doesn't even have to do other stuff on the phone, just initiates the call.
I would agree, and it may very well exist. I'm not sure myself personally, but yeah, you know, and I agree. You could theoretically just invoke it by invoking the voice commands, and if somebody may actually have an app out there that does it.
All right. Well, if there's no more questions, I thank the panel. And thanks for staying. And great question. Thanks to Adam Blum, Andrew Oswald, Joe Conway, and Kevin Griffin for coming on stage and discussing mobile development with me. We're putting more content online for ETE every week. Check techcast.chariotsolutions.com, and on the left, select conference sessions to get this feed in particular, or go ahead and subscribe to the whole shooting match. The links are all on the site. You can find out more about Chariot Solutions, including our consulting, education services, and more, by heading to chariotsolutions.com. As I mentioned at the top of the show, our education calendar is now online for the summer sessions. Classes include 2 1-day Maven courses, a 3-day pair teaching experience with EngineYard on Rails 3, and the Core Spring Framework course from SpringSource. We have all new state-of-the-art computers in our lab, and it's a great experience. We're at chariotsolutions.com/education. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rimple.